The Capital Investment Committee for February 22nd is called to order. This remote hearing is taking place in accordance with House Rule 10.01 and is being live streamed by the House Public Information Office. Mr. Wilcox, please take the roll.
Chair Lee.
Lee, present.
Lee, present. Vice Chair Murphy.
Murphy, present.
Murphy, present. Representative Erdahl.
Erdahl, present.
Erdahl, present. Representative Igbaje.
Present.
Igbaje, present. Representative Berg. Representative Berg. Representative Davids.
Davids, present.
Davids, present. Representative Frankie.
Frankie, present.
Frankie, present. Representative Freiberg.
Freiberg, present.
Freiberg, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Hewitt.
Hewitt, present.
Hewitt, present. Representative Lilly. Lilly, excused. Representative Lucero.
Lucero, present.
Lucero, present. Representative Moran.
Present.
Moran, present. Representative Pearson.
Pearson, present.
Pearson, present. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, present.
Raleigh, present. Representative Rasmussen.
Rasmussen, present.
Rasmussen, present. Representative Ryer.
Present.
Ryer, present. Representative West.
Present.
West, present. Representative Jean. Representative Jean. Representative Berg.
Present.
Berg, present. Mr. Chair, we do have a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Wilcox. A quorum is present. Chair Murphy, may I have a motion to approve the minutes for Thursday, February 17th?
I move approval of the minutes for Thursday, February 17th, as they were printed.
Chair Murphy moves approval of the minutes for Thursday, February 15th. Any discussions? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say nay. The motion prevails in the minutes for Thursday, February 17th are approved. Members, today we will finish up the state agency capital budget presentation and then move on to water-related GO bonding bills. As is custom, the four bills on the agenda will be heard on an informational-only basis. Now we will start with the Minnesota Zoo. Welcome, Director Frawley. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is John Frawley, Director of the Minnesota Zoo. Thank you for your time today and your support of the zoo. We, per a request of the chair, we brought with a special guest today. So I'm going to introduce Taryn McDermott, one of our animal care staff, who has brought a special guest in. So,
hi, everyone. Thank you for having us. As John mentioned, my name is Taryn. I am part of our Close Encounter Department. So I work with our ambassador animals here. And today we would like to introduce you to Gara. So Gara is a lesser anteater, also known as a tamandua. So these are anteaters that you would find down in Central and South America. They are much smaller than those giant anteaters that I think most people kind of picture in their head when they hear the word anteater. And they are actually perfectly adapted for life up in the trees. So Gara here has been doing actually a lot of her training sessions in the Target Learning Center here, because as our programs are getting revamped, Close Encounters is looking at doing a lot more of our programming and our show is actually here on stage and probably gonna be incorporating a mixed species show, so we'll have birds involved as well. Now, as she's climbing on this tree, you'll notice a lot of features that she has that helps her to be a good climber. You'll see she has a very long prehensile tail. So that tail will actually wrap around branches. It's extremely strong. If she were to ever lose her footing or lose her grip for some reason, that tail is there like a safety net, and it'll help her make sure that she's safe as she's climbing around nice and high in the trees. You'll also see that she has a very long snout to her, right? She has that elongated nose and it allows her to get into very small spaces where she is going to be finding her food. So being an anteater, as you can guess, she is eating a lot of bugs here at the Minnesota Zoo. She gets a lot of mealworms, a lot of crickets. And then one of her absolute favorite treats is actually avocado. She loves her avocado as well. And here, while we're using these tubes, you'll be able to see that really long tongue that she has. Their tongues are actually about 12 to 18 inches long. Anteaters don't have any teeth inside of their mouth, but what they do have is very sticky saliva. So all they have to do is stick out that tongue. You know, they're getting it into termite mounds and anthills, and all of the bugs will get stuck. And then they bring them right back into their bodies. There's that tongue. You'll also notice she's kind of holding onto her tube a little bit here, that they do have very long, sharp claws. Now, being an animal that doesn't have teeth, they have to defend themselves in a little bit different way. And that's going to be with those claws. You'll see that her arms are extremely muscular. So that allows them to actually be able to pinch really well. If they ever felt scared or threatened from a predator, they stand up really tall, they throw their arms into the air, and they show off those claws. That's them warning that predator, hey, don't come any closer, because I have very strong claws and a very strong pinch to protect myself with. So Gara was actually born here at the Minnesota Zoo in 2012. So she will be turning 10 years old in April, and she's been a part of our ambassador program ever since she was about one. So she does an amazing job coming out here, meeting people up close, good, and being able to connect with all of our guests, which is really amazing. Now, I would love to answer any questions, if anyone has any questions at all about her. Otherwise, I just wanted to say thank you so much for your support of the Minnesota Zoo.
Seeing no questions at the moment, why don't we proceed with the testimony from Director Frawley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Taryn and Gara. Mr. Chair, I'll go right into our report. And committee members, as you know, the Minnesota Zoo is a state zoo. Our mission is to connect people to animals in the natural world to save wildlife. You got a little feel of it this morning. But we are a 43-year-old zoo. We're a state zoo that's the fifth largest zoo in the country. We're almost 500-acre zoo, so we're a really good-sized zoo, over 4,000 animals, and we reach 1.3 million guests annually, and we're the largest indoor and education center in the state of Minnesota. We are a unique state agency in the fact, as far as our funding, we receive one-third of our funding from the state of Minnesota, but two-thirds of it, we have to have a smart business plan and a smart business model. And we raise that two-thirds through earned revenue and work with our foundation. So I think it's a great model and it's a great partnership. Today, in our next slide, we would like to show you our bonding request for this year. As you know, our bonding here at the zoo, our team that we put together is really focused on fixing up the old zoo. So I think over the years you've seen, I've been here on my 6 year, our team that we put together, we've realized that the people love the Minnesota Zoo, and our job is to make sure that it doesn't get old. It's not the new zoo anymore. It's 43 years old, but our projects are about fixing up the old zoo. And so that's what you're going to see from us, and it's represented in these three project requests. First, you're going to hear, and by the way, today, Mr. Chair and committee members, we have two people that are going to probably present that relate to these two projects. But just to go over a quick overview, our animal hospital renovation is our first request. We're requesting $8 million. It is a $16 million project, and we have been working to raise another $8 million publicly or privately so that we will be able to have a match for this $8 million. So it's a $16 million, but we're requesting this year $8 million for that project. The second project is under asset preservation. It's a $14 million lakeside replacement project that we will show you in detail. I kind of refer to it as our bridge project. It's a huge cement rebar infrastructure project that's failing here at the Minnesota Zoo. And then we also have additional $3 million of asset preservation to go along with the $14 million project. And the third project that I'll cover briefly is our nocturnal trail here at the zoo, which has been closed for over 10 years. Once again, we're trying to raise half the money privately, and we are asking for a $6 million match for that project. So, Mr. Chair and committee members, I'd like to ask our lead veterinarian, Dr. Taylor Yaw, to join us and be able to present on the animal hospital. Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Director Frawley, and thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for the opportunity to speak to you today. For the record, my name is Dr. Taylor Yaw, and I'm the managing veterinarian here at the Minnesota Zoo. Many of you got to meet our world-renowned board-certified veterinary team when you visited the zoo earlier this year. Our team has the pleasure and honor to take care of over 4,000 animals here at the zoo. And any given day, as you can see from the photos, every day is a little bit different. We may find ourselves helping out with a conservation project with trumpeter swans. We may be doing surgery on a southern stingray, or we may be going out into the field to immobilize a moose for a dental procedure. Although our team is trained and able to take care of all the different species here at the Minnesota Zoo, it's really our facilities that continue to impede our abilities to perform our job and to take care of all the different species to the fullest. Our animal hospital is over 40 years old. In the last few years, we've had to put a lot of resources into the building to keep our medical team running. The first picture on the left is our current surgical suite that often doubles as our intensive care unit. It's not uncommon that if we need to hospitalize an animal and go to surgery, that we have to push some of our most critical animals out into the hallway so that our surgery can continue forward. The middle picture is a picture of our team performing a ruminotomy on one of the goats from our family farm. And as you can see, the space, there's just not too much space in there, and it lacks a lot of the technology pieces that I would expect to see in a modern zoological facility. And on the right, this is really the reality of what we're facing, is that we just don't have the space to move some of our larger animals in, such as the Malayan tapir pictured here. So we have to do a lot of these procedures out in the field, which means that we're doing them down on the ground, which is a lot of wear and tear on our team in terms of bending, stooping, and trying to move some of these heavy animals. This not only increases the risk of infection, but also just makes doing our job very difficult. So the picture on the left, this is the picture of our aged outdoor holding space, and our team currently does not utilize this space due to risk of safety issues with our staff and just also for the potential for an animal escape. This really impedes our ability for holding and hospitalizing patients. If we had these outdoor spaces, it'd be a great space to be able to get animals outside for some fresh air and would just increase our ability to hospitalize more patients. The picture on the right shows our unloading dock. And as you can see, our current hospital doesn't have a place for transitioning animals from the transport vehicle into the hospital without exposure to the elements. On cold winter days, such as today, this is a major safety issue. If you're trying to move a dangerous animal, one, they're just exposed to the outdoor elements. Icy conditions can be dangerous. And after hours, we don't have control of lighting. A hospital renovation would not only address our indoor facilities, but would also make some much needed improvements to our outdoor holding spaces. It would include the addition of an ambulance port, so our patients aren't exposed to the Minnesota elements during procedures, and would add the much needed technologies and safety equipment for our team to provide world-class veterinary care. This renovation is not only critical to improve the medical care for our veterinary team, but it's also critical for retaining our world-class veterinarians.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If it's okay with you, we'd like to move on to our next project, where I've invited our project manager at the zoo, Thomas Root, to go over our Lakeside Plaza project.
Please proceed, Mr. Root.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, representatives, and John. For the record, my name is Thomas Root. I'm the project management director at the Minnesota Zoo. I'm also a licensed professional engineer in the state of Minnesota, and the bulk of my engineering experience is designing and evaluating structures. I'd like to talk just a little bit about our Lakeside Plaza project. Giving you a picture here, it is a 45-year-old infrastructure that connects the zoo to its main lake and serves as a main public circulation and exiting pathway. It's about 500 feet long, winds around, it's 20 to 40 feet wide at different locations, and it has a large, not pictured in this, but a 300-foot-long switchback concrete ramp. It also serves as the roof to some sensitive mechanical and animal care spaces below it. Significant deterioration began to become a problem for the zoo in the early 2010s. And we performed a structural investigation, and it was determined that water intrusion into the structure was the main factor. The zoo installed new concrete topping and a water barrier to protect the underlying structure. Continued deterioration occurred, resulting in the zoo implementing a load and gathering limit in the area, which is problematic because that area is intended to be a gathering area. Despite these efforts, deterioration continues and threatens the eventual closure of the asset, resulting in significant circulation and exiting ramifications to the public. The left image here shows prevalent reinforcement corrosion, resulting in large cracks and concrete loss. The center image shows a retaining wall that has rotated approximately 4 inches due to some structural movement due to water behind the wall. The right image shows additional large concrete cracks and reinforcement corrosion. For this project, $14 million of our asset preservation request is allocated to addressing and replacing or stabilizing the area as best we can. To talk more about the rest of our asset preservation request, those funds would go towards mechanical, electric, and plumbing infrastructure, which requires systematic replacement of modern systems to support the safety of animals, guests, and staff, and maximize efficiency and minimize operating cost. We'd begin replacing or continue replacing the remaining original skylight glass in the tropics building to reduce potential for delaminated broken glass shards falling on the animals and public. We'd make improvements to our roads, bridges, and pathways, and extend the useful life of animal exhibits to meet modern animal welfare standards, safety improvements, and improve the public's experience. Thank you, committee. I turn the presentation back to John.
Thanks. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. The last project, which I can just cover briefly, I think a lot of committee members have toured this part of the zoo, but in our main tropics building, we have a 400-foot pathway that's been boarded up with plywood over exhibits for the last 10 years. It's called our Nocturnal Trail. It's historically one of the favorite trails at the Minnesota Zoo. It was closed due to outdated HVAC, plumbing, mechanical, and poor animal care conditions. So we are asking for our third request for $6 million of a match that will raise an additional six for a $12 million project here to reopen the Minnesota Zoo's Nocturnal Trail and continue being a world-class zoo. So, Mr. Chair, committee members, just to go over the requests and then I can take any questions. Our animal hospital request of $8 million, which was presented by Dr. Yaw. Our Lakeside Plaza replacement project 14 with an additional three for asset preservation. Like I said, that Lakeside Plaza, it's our big infrastructure. Like I said, I call it our bridge project. It's a failing infrastructure that has safety and access and egress associated with it. It's not a fun project for us, but it's something that we need to do for Minnesotans to enjoy the zoo. So we need to get that done as a team. And then finally, our request for a matching $6 million for restoring and reopening our Nocturnal Trail. Mr. Chair, committee members, I just want to really thank you for your time and consideration of these projects. And we'll take any questions at this time.
Thank you, Director Frawley. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to thank the zoo for coming today. I have been honored to work with them over the last three years now in working on their projects. And I want the committee to know that the management team at the zoo really does try hard to make the zoo accessible to all Minnesotans, regardless of income or economic status. And that this asset that we have as a state is shared by all of Minnesota. And it's really important that we want people to see that we keep our assets up. And as naturally as you can see, some of the areas of the zoo really do need help. So I would really like to get your support on moving forward with their request here. And again, I'd like to thank the outstanding management at the Minnesota Zoo. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Mr. Frawley. I appreciate the times that we have spent at the zoo looking over the projects and such, and you know, certainly I'm hopeful that we can do some things. Now, I'm going to ask you to you'll think about prioritization a little bit. I know that's tough to do. These are all important to you. But as we go through the process, we might need to know what is most important to you. And when you look at the asset preservation, if we can do half of what you're requesting, what are the most important asset preservations? Again, hopefully we'll be able to do more, but please keep in mind that that's helpful to us. Thank you.
Director Folley.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you for that question. The two projects that we put at the first two projects, the vet hospital and the Lakeside Plaza, both have safety and health and egress and access, which relate to the emergency services tied to them. So obviously those were two projects that we put forward above the nocturnal trail. The vet hospital has animal health and lives associated with it, and safety for our team as well. You know, so that is a priority project, followed right behind an engineering project that we have been heard from professional engineers is heading towards a major safety concern with the number one, the top walkway at the Minnesota Zoo for egress and access for fire and safety equipment. So both of those projects are prioritized for us, and they're there because of the safety and factors for animals and for the public and for our staff. So, Mr. Chair, in both those projects, the unfortunate with the Lakeside project, we are requesting $17 million for asset preservation. That project is a project that has to be completed at one time. It cannot be phased. So that $14 million, unfortunately, because of the unique location, I think you've seen it's right in the heart of the middle of the zoo. It's going to be a very disruptive project. And so that project should be done all at once for that $14 million request.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Frawley, we appreciate that. And that's, you know, valuable to hear again the public safety, the animal health concerns that you have. And I'm sure that it will be taken into consideration.
Thank you, Chair and committee members. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Frawley and your team for coming by today. Next up on the agenda is the Minnesota Historical Society. Welcome to the committee, Director. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Kent Whitworth. I'm the Director and CEO of the Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Murphy, Ranking Member Erdahl, and members of the committee, thank you for taking a few minutes to learn about the Minnesota Historical Society's capital budget request for 2022. We certainly appreciated you stopping at the Mill City Museum on your bonding tours last fall, and I hope that you were able to not only better understand the powerful connection point that the Mill City Museum provides to our history, but also to see firsthand the asset preservation needs of the Minnesota Historical Society. Joining me today are David Kelleher, Director of Public Policy, and Murray Bjornborg, Manager of Capital Projects. You met Murray at Mill City Museum, and obviously you've known David for a number of years. Mr. Chair, we'd also like to thank Representative Hewitt for introducing House File 3223, which contains the Minnesota Historical Society's capital budget requests. Chair Lee, the Minnesota Historical Society recently completed a strategic plan for the next 5 years, and the relevance of this new plan to the request that we're bringing before you today is that our capital budget plans are part of a larger context of how we serve all Minnesotans. We are pushing history to all corners of Minnesota by removing barriers and by expanding expertise and partnerships, all with a close eye on sustainability. The slides provide a few highlights from the plan, but I am always more than happy to talk to committee members about how all of this fits together. Mr. Chair, we are bringing forward three requests to you in 2022. The first is historic sites asset preservation. The second is History Center facilities enhancements. And the third is county and local historic preservation grants. I'd like to provide just a little bit of context on the environment in which we work. MNHS is responsible for more than 150 structures across Minnesota. Many of them are more than 100 years old. And the Historic Sites Network is part of statutorily, these sites are part of a statutorily defined historic sites network in Minnesota Statutes 138. So this is very definitely a state responsibility. These aren't just your everyday building projects, the kind of home improvement projects we might all be dealing with at home. These require specialized design and construction techniques, and each of these projects involving historic structures must follow the Secretary of Interior standards for the treatment of historic properties. In addition to those historic buildings, I think it's important to point out that many of our modern visitor centers in our sites network were constructed in the 1970s. And so you understand that within their life cycle, they've reached a point where they require substantial repair and in some cases replacement. So I wanted to provide that context. And Mr. Chair, if it's okay with you, I'd like to introduce a colleague, Marae Bjornborg, who manages our capital projects.
Ms. Bjornborg, please identify yourself and proceed.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Marae Bjornborg, manager of capital projects for the Minnesota Historical Society. And I will talk a little bit about our facility needs in general and then some of our projects more specifically. David, if you can, thank you. So we think of our facilities like a water bucket or a rain barrel, if you have one of those. And the water in the bucket represents our facilities, which through natural wear and tear deteriorate each year. Our responsibility is to allocate the resources for the routine maintenance as well as for the larger projects through asset preservation. We can qualify the how much water is leaking from the bucket each year and how much is needed, therefore, to replenish those facilities. And this is information that we draw from our facility condition audits and through ARCOVIS. We know that in order to replenish the bucket, we need to add about 4% of the total replacement value of facilities each year. And so that is really one of the things that we base our asset preservation requests on. Next one. As you can sort of see here, this is that 4% replacement value that I was just talking about and our 2022 requests. And for comparison, there's also the 2020 appropriation and our 20-year average asset preservation funding. So just to really illustrate the gap that we are working with. And this graph shows the 2020 appropriation as well as the 2022, 24, and 26 requests that you have seen. So I will dig into the 2022 capital budget asset preservation projects specifically here. And we have about 19 projects that we have requested funding for, and they are in prioritized order. So I will go through some of these projects as well as talk about some of the projects that we've already completed with asset preservation money. So as Kemp had mentioned earlier, we have a unique situation in which we have a lot of historic structures that we are taking care of, and those all require sort of specialized work, both in design and construction. And I think that this photo, this photo on the right of the Mill City Elevator Number 1 headhouse roof replacement is a really great photo to articulate what we are working with. So this is a pretty standard roof replacement job, but as you can see, we're in the middle of a city with Mill City, as you all were able to see when you were visiting. And so it is a struggle to get a crane in there or to build scaffolding all around. And you can see in the lower left-hand corner sort of what scaffolding does look like when we are able to put it up. But so the easiest and cheapest way for us to repair this roof or replace this roof was to actually have scaffolding built off of the top of it. And as you can imagine, getting materials up to that location is, again, another struggle. And those are sort of all of these things that we are getting to deal with as we are doing asset preservation projects on our sites. And those are things that also escalate our project costs. And you can see the Split Rock Visitor Center was another project that we were able to do with asset preservation money that was on a modern visitor center. In 2018, we did a exterior rehabilitation on the Forestville barns, and then we also did an interior rehabilitation. And then we do sort of more run-of-the-mill HVAC replacement, fire and security, boiler on all of our sites as well. We are finishing up right now, again, with the 2018 allocation, an exterior preservation house on, or exterior preservation project on the Folsom House in Taylor's Falls, an exterior preservation project at the Mille Lacs Indian Museum. And then we are replacing a roof at the Visitor Center at Forest History Center. And another exciting project that we are working through design on right now is the Hill House Masonry Rehabilitation, which is, you can see this, these are some verandas on the back. And if you look at the brick vaulted ceilings, you can see that white efflorescence. There's a lot of moisture that is moving through here that we are having to manage right now. And then we are starting a trails and landscape project up at Split Rock that will repair the trails that we have there, as well as bring back some of the historic circulation routes that are no longer present. And talking a little bit more about our 2022 request. So the top of the list is the Fort Snelling Round Tower repairs. This is one of the oldest structures in Minnesota. And this is a photo that I would say does a really good job of showing some of the deterioration around the top of the tower. There's a lot of moisture that is getting into this building that we need to do some structural work inside, as well as repointing on the exterior. There are always projects at Mill City, and the second one that we have on our list is the train shed and East Engine House preservation. So this map sort of in the middle shows you the train shed structure and the East Engine House. And that is, again, a lot of masonry, repointing, and then some sort of structural stability stuff. going through a few more of these, you can see again that the Mill City structures, Fort Snelling wall stabilization. This is actually the wall that runs along the bluff that the historic fort is built on. And what you can see in this middle photo is removing trees. We basically have a lot of growth that comes through that wall, and we need to do some work to remove all of that and then make sure that we are securing that wall, repointing it. Split Rock Dwelling Number 3 Interior Preservation. This building is not being used right now. It is the last of the three historic dwellings that the keepers lived in. And all of the water is shut off. There is a water leaking in there, and then there is a lot of hazmat, so hazardous materials that need to be removed before people can go back into that building. Next slide, David. So again, this is the prioritized list of our needs, and Mr. Chair, I will hand it over to my colleague, David Kelleher, if that is all right.
Mr. Kelleher, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm David Kelleher, Minnesota Historical Society. Mr. Chair, our second request, and I'm trying to get the slides to move forward, and they are not at this moment. Our second request is to begin work on the next chapter of the Minnesota History Center. I'm gonna just stop sharing here for a second because my screen is frozen up. The Minnesota History Center will be 30 years old this fall, and like the zoo, Mr. Frawley said that it's sometimes referred to as the new zoo, and sometimes people still refer to the History Center as the new History Center. We are 30 years old, and when the History Center was built in the late 80s and early 90s, we did not have considerations for security and technology that we have today. And Mr. Chair, as we look to the next 30 years or 50 years in the life of the Minnesota History Center, we want to do some planning to make sure that we use the space efficiently and effectively moving forward. So our request this year is $500,000 for pre-design for doing some additional work on the Minnesota History Center. Mr. Chair, sorry about the technology. Our third request is for the County and Local Historic Preservation Grant Program. This grant program assists cities and counties in preserving their most significant historic structures. This grant program has been around in most bonding bills since the mid-1990s, with a couple of exceptions. And these are things that, in some recent examples, will help cities and counties preserve, for example, improved accessibility of a historic city hall in northwestern Minnesota, repair and restoration of a historic mill building in Ottertail County, and protection of original wood windows on the historic courthouse in Washington County. So, Mr. Chair, this request is for $1 million for grants for cities and counties to preserve their most significant historic structures. And with that, I'd like to turn it back to Director Whitworth.
Thank you, David. Thank you, Murray. Mr. Chair, I'd like to provide just a very brief update on a recent project that was funded by this committee, and that is the revitalization of historic Fort Snelling. I am very excited to report that construction is nearly complete and we are on track to open our new visitor center and museum in the historic Cavalry Barracks building. That opening will take place over Memorial Day weekend this spring, and each of you on the committee will be receiving more information soon on special events surrounding this reopening at historic Fort Snelling. Mr. Chair, I'd also like to acknowledge that each of you have received written testimony very recently, which contains a number of inaccuracy, and I know you have a very full agenda this morning, but please know that at your convenience, we would be happy to answer any questions you might have about that testimony. Thank you again for your time and attention this morning and for your continuing support of preserving Minnesota's history.
Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thanks to the leadership of the Historical Society of Minnesota. It's been an honor to be an author of your bill here. And I just want to say to the members that it's so important that we send to the next generation of legislators the importance of preserving our assets and our history, as all of us have just went through a very historical time in Minnesota, and those assets will have to be preserved in the future. So I think it's so important, and I want to commend the great work that they've done with the limited assets they've had, limited money that they've had in the past. And I really look forward to seeing what we can do for them this time. I'm hoping we can support this bill in whole. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt, and thank you, Director Whitworth and your team for coming by. Next up on the agenda is the Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation. Welcome to the committee. Commissioner Phillips, please identify yourself and proceed.
Yes, thank you. Again, for the record, Mark Phillips, I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Iron Range Resources and Rehabilitation. We are, and thank you for having myself, and I have Sean Pyla, who is our director of operations at our Giants Ridge Recreation Area, who will also be participating in our presentation. Next slide, Sean. So our capital request is for $10.191 million capital budget request to replace a failing underground infrastructure at Giants Ridge Recreational Area. This water replacement will sustain the facility's recreation operations and provide fire suppression services. Next slide. So our facilities purpose and goals revolve around creating economic development for northeastern Minnesota. This property was developed 35 plus years ago to provide recreational facilities to enhance the quality of life in northeastern Minnesota, but also to attract private sector investment and create economic development as a year-round recreation destination. We attracted over 133,000 visits in fiscal year 20 from primarily Minnesota, around the US and Canada. We've also attracted private residential and lodging facilities that have built within the area, the Giants Ridge Rec area, and provides additional tax base for the local communities. Next slide, please. We truly are a statewide, or if not an international destination. We draw quite a bit of people and visits from Canada, as well as around the upper Midwest. So we also, I want to just point out, we recently, just in the last week, hosted the Minnesota High School League state competition for Nordic and Alpine skiing recently. And we are a prime destination for a lot of elementary age school children in our region. Next slide, please. So over the last 7 or 8 years, we've every few years measured the economic impact. The first time we measured it in 2015, it was about 43.4 million. And we recently updated that for the 17 to 19 period. And we have calculated that the economic impact of the rec area is about $55.4 million annually. And it provides a significant number of jobs. I do want to say we've developed a business plan that our bonding request this year is critical for the business plan we put together that will gradually raise this economic impact from strategic investments that we're proposing that would bring this up to about $85.5 million in the next 10 years. And I want to turn it over now to Sean, who will talk about the infrastructure ask. Sean Pyla.
All right, Pyla, please identify yourself and proceed.
All right, my name is Sean Pyla. I'm the Director of Mountain Operations and Facilities at Giants Ridge. I'd just like to thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for having us here today. I just want to talk a little bit about the project that we are looking at doing. Throughout the ski area, we have approximately 5.5 miles of underground infrastructure. This is water lines and electrical that support the snowmaking operations at Giants Ridge. Over recent years, we've had many number of failures of these water lines due to deterioration. They were installed in the mid 80s and we've really been dealing with, patching these pipes up and trying to repair them the best we can, but they're getting to the point where they're very tough to repair even with the condition of the pipe. So through this project, what we look at doing is improving about 90% of the infrastructure overall here, and then putting in 36,000 linear feet of pipe to support the system. We would be using steel pipe to put back in the ground for this project. And some people ask, well, why would you put steel pipe back in if it's just gonna deteriorate again? Well, one of the answers to that question is that for our pressures that we run, for this operation, steel pipe is the only material that can still stand up to the high pressures. And looking at maximizing the life of the new steel pipe that we'd be installing, we'd be doing a cathodic protection system that would double the useful life of the pipe. Some impacts for the project: it would increase efficiencies, maximize our pump station capacity, and reduce energy and water consumption. We could reduce water costs by 30% and become 40% more energy efficient through the operations here. Cost savings, also reducing repairs and downtime that's caused by this infrastructure failure. And then we'd also improve safety, specifically with employees, through automation by eliminating the hazards associated with the manual transport and staging of snowmaking machines. And finally, a great benefit to the system that we've seen recently out west, back this summer in South Lake Tahoe, a few resorts out there actually employed their or deployed their snowmaking infrastructure and their snowmaking machines to protect facility assets and buildings against dangerous wildfires. So definitely an added benefit. So this could be used for regional fire suppression if a fire ever were to come through the area. And after that, I will turn it back over to Commissioner Phillips.
Commissioner Phillips.
Thank you. The other thing I want to point out is that we very often get questions about, you know, what about the agency's resources? We do redeploy tax night production taxes, which are paid in lieu of local property taxes. So we have invested considerable capital at Giants Ridge, and we do have a plan to propose additional capital investments that will reduce our operating subsidy of the facility of the recreational area. And we've already made progress. We've taken about $1 million a year out of our subsidy for the recreational area in the last couple of years. And we have a plan to invest another over a 10-year period, probably another $10 million of taconite taxes in this. So we are probably more than matching the, because we have an annual capital asset preservation and small capital projects of about between $1 and $2 million a year. So we'd be more than matching the $10 million that the we're asking the legislature to help us. This particular project doesn't have additional revenue attached to it. And we're so this is where we are reaching out to the state to help us with this critical infrastructure that we can't operate. And to answer another question we received from time to time, although this could be phased, it could probably, because we have to operate the system every year, if we phase this, it would probably drive the costs up. And when we approached the state on this project, I believe about 7 years ago, it was, I think, $8.6 million. It's now almost $10.2 million. So you can see if we have to phase it further out, it's just going to drive the cost up. So we'd really appreciate the help on this year. And I'd be happy to answer any questions, or Sean and I could answer any questions for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Phillips. Seeing no questions from members, thank you so very much for coming by. Next up on the agenda is the Amateur Sports Commission. Welcome to the committee, Director Johnson, and please begin with your presentation. Director Johnson, you're muted.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Todd Johnson. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission. I'll try to be as brief as possible, but most of you have either been up here on a tour or been up here with your kids or been up here with your grandchildren, so you know about the importance of this facility. I'm going to have my colleague put the handout I sent to you, and it's not a formal presentation. I just want to be sort of quirk about how we go through this and make sure that he's just trying to share the document right now. But as you know, this is a really special place. I was going to share some video with you. The U.S. Women's National Hockey Team, the Olympic team, was just here in residence for four or five, probably 6 months throughout the summer. When they left, the neighboring school kids all lined along the street and waved them goodbye and wished them good luck. They're supposed to be returning tonight to this facility. The U.S. Women's National Team, as you know, played a really important game at Allianz Stadium. They practiced up here for a couple of days. And then the men's national team recently had a match at Allianz Stadium against Honduras, and Honduras was up here. Just a couple of big ticket items that have been going on. But I think equally important, as most of you know, we host the qualifier for the 3M Open on our golf course at Victory Links. This is where some of the world's top golfers come to try to compete and get one of the two or three coveted spots at the Thursday event across the street at the TPC. When I first took over this job, I thought for sure that when we did that, something that high caliber, we would shut down the course and make sure that everything was pristine. That's not the model that we have at all here. On the very same day that we have that qualifier, that afternoon we host the Special Olympics on our golf course. That's really the type of facility that we are. Then the last two things on this little list of highlights, the Herb Brooks Holiday Classic, which is our holiday tournament, hosts teams from all over the state. And this year there was, winners were from Laverne. USA Cup, you all know about that. It's the third largest youth soccer tournament in the world. I like to say, when you look at the last year, we had international teams. We had a team from Liberia. So this facility literally hosts teams from Laverne to Liberia. And, part of that results in quite a substantial amount of economic development, which I'll be sharing with you in a second. We had originally asked the governor's office and MMB for $22 million. Their proposal came back at 12, which we're fine with. Almost, it is totally 100% asset preservation. I'll go into some of those projects, but I think it's just equally important for you to see what a great investment you all made. Especially you, Vice Chair Murphy, were around when that vote was taken and Governor Perpich proposed this idea for this facility. I think the state of Minnesota has a total of about $29 million in this campus. And if you look at the current replacement value, it's $183 million. Some of you realize, again, through your kids or your grandkids, what a big industry sports tourism is. And I think this state of Minnesota was really wise in capturing that very early on. I like to say our number one problem right now is that we're 30 years old, which means that our infrastructure needs some replacement. And our second problem is that we're 30 years old and that we have since created competition all over the country for the types of events that we host and that we have hold here. But if you look cumulatively over the years of the operation, it's nearly $1 billion in economic impact that this facility has generated. Again, we do not have a operating subsidy at all from the state of Minnesota. We figure out a way to make that work, but we do come to the legislature for funds like this to keep our facilities up and running. Two big projects, and I'd be happy to go into more detail on the others if anyone had any question, but I think to simplify, the two big projects that we really need to get completed and we're shovel ready, so to speak, literally, because we have to dig into the ground. We need to replace our irrigation system for this 700 acre campus. We have 26 miles of mainline irrigation and all of its tributaries. So if you think about the cost of that and the importance of having quality fields to attract good teams, to have quality facilities to attract good teams, that is self-evident in the importance of what that conditions of those fields are. We just completed a survey of all visitors from the last big year. Response is overwhelming. We're great events, unbelievable events. Can't wait to come back, but can you do something about improving some of your fields that aren't in great shape? And that's what we want to do. The second big chunk of money is $4 million, closer to six really, is the replacement of the refrigeration plant and the front four rinks of our ice rink. Many of you know we have 8 sheets of ice. We used to brag about being the world's largest, but unfortunately someone outdid us out in Massachusetts. We still are quite proud of our facility, and it's full every single day save 2 weekends of the year. So this building has had its use. Many of you are familiar with the Mighty Ducks funding that other ice facilities around the state have been able to facilitate in order to do these replacements that are critical, because the refrigerant R22 is no longer sold. It's actually been banned. So a lot of facilities are switching over to ammonia. You can still use it. But you can no longer purchase it. So everyone is switching over their systems. But what we really want to do, and I'll end with this, is those ice rinks are, to the best of my knowledge, the only ice rinks that are owned by the state of Minnesota. And we host a couple of events that are really pretty special and unique. One is for the Weekend Warriors sled hockey tournament that takes place at our facility. And the other is just the Hendrickson Foundation has their youth sled hockey tournament up here as well. So part of this rehab would be to make that facility the premier place for people with these special needs who want to play sports to have the rink of their own. Representative Lilly and others who I know play hockey could understand this. Part of the problem when you are in a sled is you're not at eye level to see what's going on. So you have to sort of create a bench in front of the bench, and it's not necessarily the most safe, nor is it the best experience. So our idea is for two of those rinks to have all glass boards. Some of you will recall the old Civic Center in St. Paul, where it's certainly doable, but it's just never been done because there's, you know, other reasons people don't want to do that. But we know that it's our charge, our statutory duty to make sure that our facility is available for all Minnesotans of any disability. And we take that charge seriously. And when we do this rehabilitation for this ice rink, we want to make sure we get that right. That's really it for me. If anyone has any questions, I'd be happy to share them with you. As you can tell, we're the second largest tourist attraction in the state of Minnesota. We like to brag about over 4 million visitors. And if you look at the attendees in the bottom of that sheet, you can see where there's a major spike. That's when the ice rinks were built. So it started off with soccer, and you could see what happened once the ice rinks were built. So, Mr. Chair, I'm completed.
Thank you, Director Johnson. Seeing no questions from member, really appreciate you coming by this morning. And that wraps up all of the presentations from the state agencies. Now we'll move on to the bills. First up, we have Representative Robbins, House File 2710. Please proceed. Representative Robbins, you're muted right now.
Oh, so sorry, Mr. Chair. I was in judiciary and I didn't have my double screens working right here. Good morning, members. Representative Kristen Robbins from Rogers, Dayton, and Maple Grove. And I'm here today with our constituents from the city of Maple Grove with a request for the committee. We greatly appreciate you hearing our request today for assistance with two wellhead treatment projects that are really important to this growing part of my district. And with that, I would be happy to introduce our city administrator, Tina Goodrow.
Please identify yourself, Ms. Goodrow, and proceed.
Thank you. Hi, this is Tina Goodrow, City of Dayton. I'm the city administrator and director of development. I want to thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for this opportunity to present our request for wellhead treatment facilities. With me today is Marty Farrell, our public works director, as well as our engineer, Adam Marcos from Black and Beach. I'm going to attempt to share my screen while Marty starts the presentation for us today.
Good morning. Our presentation today is a summary of a presentation that staff and our consultant Adam Marcos gave to a Senate delegation in August of 2021. Can you move to the next slide?
Mr. Farrell, before you proceed, can you identify yourself?
Sorry, Marty Farrell, City of Dayton Public Works Director. Our agenda today is to discuss the water system that we've decided upon, what the water quality treatment looks like, costs, and some environmental sustainable inequity issues. What we'd start with is a little bit of history about Dayton water distribution. The system is unusual in that it's building out from three areas of the city instead of one central location. The areas we are concerned with today are outlined on this slide, the northwest area, known as the Old Village in Dayton, and the northeast of Dayton, which is the bigger area, which is supplied by Dayton Water. We have two water quality issues to contend with, excessive iron in the northeast part of the system, and elevated manganese above the Minnesota Department of Health safety guidelines in the northwest part of the city, or the Old Village. These charts here will show what we're talking about. In the Old Village, the manganese level is elevated in well 1 to 340 parts per billion, as opposed to the 100 that they're recommending. The number that you see on the chart, the 50, is a secondary target. The safe levels, as approved by Minnesota Department of Health, are 100 parts per billion for young children and 300 parts per billion for adults. So while One is way over the limits for both adults and children, whereas well three is significantly higher but more dangerous to children. Again, in the Northeast, we have an iron issue there, well above the recommended secondary levels of 988 parts per billion as opposed to the 300 that is recommended, and well four is 1,420 parts per billion. The manganese levels are within the thresholds that the Minnesota Department of Health had just released. When the city first applied for funding, we were looking at one treatment plant in the Northeast, which is our primary concern. Subsequently, we found from Minnesota Department of Health, manganese levels were a challenge in the Northwest, or the Old Village part of the supply system. And we concurred that treatment was needed for both issues. So we decided we needed to construct two plants. What you have on your screen now is a selection of photographs that we've received from residents displaying the discoloration of the water. And I think the next slide will show a few comments that we have received over the last period of time from residents displaying their dissatisfaction with the water quality. Staff selected wellhead treatment as a solution because a cost-effective approximately $4 million per plant as opposed to approximately $25 million for a centralized plant. Ease of incorporating into the overall system, which means that we would not have to run miles of costly pipe to join the Northeast and Northwest system. Currently, the two systems are separated. This is seen as a permanent solution in the Northeast and Northwest parts of the city, so it's not a throwaway cost. This will be the way that we operate going forward. With this system, we can incorporate two wells per treatment plant. With regard to cost, when we initially asked for funding, our funding request was a total of $8 million. Our funding was $6.9 million with a city contribution of $1.1 million. But since we made this request, we've had some raise in costs due to inflation, but the city is still only asking for the original funding request of $6.9 million. We will be upping our contribution to $2.1 million, absorbing an extra $1 million of costs for a total of $9 million for the total project. That's both of the wellhead treatment facilities. With regard to environmental sustainability and equity, we are going to be looking at reduction in chemical usage through this treatment facility. We will not be relying on chemicals to control iron and manganese. Rather, we will be using a sand, which will be the filter medium used to perform the task of removing the iron and the manganese from the water. As a lot of systems, they have a backwash facility, and a lot of that water gets sent down into the municipal waste. We will reuse the backwash water and reclaim that water and put it back in the system. We will improve the safety and aesthetics of city water supply for the community that relies on city water. This will make treated water available to all city residents, not just the households being served in the south part of town by Maple Grove and Champlin, who supply treated water to those residents. So we're making the playing field level there. Some residents are resistant to installing home filter systems due to installation, ongoing maintenance costs, filter replacements, etc., and the costs they are already paying for water. The population that is affected is approximately 1,670 households. About 78% of the residents on municipal water. With that, I'll stand for any questions.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and to the testifier. Are you eligible for PFA funding? And if so, have you made a request? And where would you be ranked?
Ms. Farrell or Ms. Goodrow?
Thank you. We've looked into it, and from a standpoint of the requirements for household income, we are not eligible.
Representative Erdahl.
Okay, thank you. That answers my question.
Seeing no other question, thank you so very much for coming by. Next up on the agenda is House File 3126. Representative Olson, I understand that you have an amendment coded A22-0306. Can you reference and explain that before proceeding? Thanks.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, so this amendment would just remove the word storm in front of the word water. So on the bill, when it says stormwater, we're just removing the word storm because we need this bill to encompass the entirety of the city's water infrastructure.
Sounds good. Representative Olson, please proceed.
So thank you for hearing this bill. You know, we're talking about the things that a bonding bill definitely needs to carry, and you've got state assets on top, and then underneath that, you've got water and essential needs. I don't know of a single situation where this would be more necessary than the city of Louisville. One thing, you know, taxpayers for a city should be able to pay for and carry their own, a lot of their own stuff. Well, the city of Louisville attempted to do that. They built a water treatment plant a number of years ago, and they flipped the lights on and the lights didn't come on. They spent over $2 million fixing or building a new water treatment plant that didn't work. And then the company that built it went out of business. They went bankrupt. And so there was no way that they could recoup any of that lost money. So then the city of Louisville had to purchase another water treatment plant. So they spent over $5 million building water treatment plants because the first one didn't work. Now we're looking at a situation in the city where they're mowing the streets because the infrastructure is so old and these roads are in such rough shape. And on top of that, they've got 1 million gallons a year of water going through their treatment plant that is unaccounted for because the storm water is leaking into their water treatment plant. So they've got a lot of issues. The poor city has already done what they can do to pay for what they're responsible for. And due to a circumstance that they couldn't control, they're looking at an obscene amount of money. So with me today to testify, we've got the mayor of Louisville. And Mr. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to hand that over to her.
Please identify yourself, Madam Mayor, and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Barb File, Mayor of the City of Louisville. We appreciate you allowing us to be heard today. We are asking for $5.4 million. The City of Louisville is in desperate need of a new citywide sewer and water system, including road construction, due to the age and condition of our facilities. We have paid to have a wastewater treatment plant designed and for our contractor to construct the new wastewater treatment plant, as Representative Olson has already mentioned. Once they started using the new treatment plant, it did not work and the construction company went bankrupt. That left us with no means to be reimbursed. We again had to pay for a new design and a new contractor to do the project at the cost of $3 million. Thankfully, the second treatment plant works just fine. This unfortunate situation has financially strapped our small town in our current and future financial obligations, leaving our residents and the city with no funds or capacity to pay for the new sewer, water, or roadway facilities. The city's reserves are very low due to the ongoing replacement of sewer line hookups that continue to fail due to the poor workmanship by the first contractor's failure to correctly hook up the lines from the residents' homes to the sewer lines. Our sanitary and water systems are both 60 years old. They need to be replaced. Unfortunately, the city of Louisville has one of the highest utility rates in Minnesota. With both the sewer and the water together, our average monthly bill is $120 a month. We will need to raise our rates to an average of $190 per month per home with no help from the state. With your help, we will only need to raise it another $20. On top of that, we have the lowest medium household income of $47,750. Our residents pay high property taxes with the city's rate at 127%. We appreciate your consideration of our bill, as our current financial situation prohibits us from being able to fund these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor File. Is that all for your presentation today then? Before we turn it over to members' questions?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are, there's also handouts and pictures of the grass that's growing in the streets.
Okay, thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I'm very familiar with the city of Louisville, and I'm really hoping that this committee can help them out. They're under a lot of stress, and it's a wonderful, wonderful community, and I think we need to do anything we can do to help them out. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Davids. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And to, I guess, Mayor File, same question that I've had before. Have you a PFA request? Where do you rank in their list? And I guess for future presentations here, if they could answer that question to save me the task of having to ask it, I'd appreciate it.
Mayor File.
I'm really sorry. We have a bad connection here, so I did not hear all of that question. I'm so sorry.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mayor File, I'm asking about PFA. Do you have a request in for them? And if so, where are you ranked?
Mayor File.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I have my city clerk here along with me. I'm going to have her answer that for us.
Please identify yourself and proceed.
One moment, please.
Hello, I'm Clerk Gail Culbertson. And we are at this moment, we are having a public hearing tonight for our public facility plan. And then we'll present it to MPCA at that time after it's approved tonight at our public hearing.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Madam Clerk, you know, Public Facilities Authority deals with water projects like this, and you know they do have a system to offer grants and loans. And I'm wondering if you have directly made an application to them, and if you are on their list.
I see, Mr. Corby. Please identify yourself and answer the question.
Yeah, Tim Corby, City Engineer for Lewisville. Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members, and Representative Erdahl. Yes, we are in the process of applying for PFA, and we'll get into the cycle for that. Due to the human health issues that we're dealing with right now, as an example, their water tower is frozen, solid like a popsicle, and they do not have fire protection because of that. So it is very urgent, and it's a dire situation that we need to address this situation right now. But we are aware of PFA. We will be putting in the PFA application in May, and we'll be getting into that cycle. We desperately request that we get some state funding as soon as possible for this human health issue.
Thank you, Mr. Corby. Representative Erdahl, last question.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And what I would urge is that you expedite that request, because a lot of times money appropriated through this committee is largely influenced by the rankings of the PFA. So I would do that as soon as you could. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Erdahl. Representative Murphy. Chair Murphy, you're muted right now.
What is the population of Lewisville, and have they been in PFA before?
Mayor File.
We have 225 residents in our town, and I do not believe we've been in PFA before, no.
Chair Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Olson, for coming by. Next up on the agenda is Representative Hamilton, House File 2989. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House File 2989 is, we're asking for $500,000 to upgrade the filter facility in the little town of Westbrook. Mr. Chairman, I do have two testifiers. One is the Cottonwood County Commissioner, Larry Anderson, to briefly tell us about the community of Westbrook, and then also Dan Joel. He's the superintendent for public utilities in this community. So I'd like to turn it over to my testifiers at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Commissioner Anderson, please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, committee members. I'm Larry Anderson, Cottonwood County Commissioner, District 1. Just briefly, let you know, Westbrook is a small farming community in the southwest corner of Minnesota. Primary economic drivers in our area is agricultural. Very little retail in the city of Westbrook. Westbrook Public Utilities serves the residents of Westbrook, which also includes four churches, a nursing home, Westbrook Walnut Grove High School, Sanford Westbrook Medical Center, and Peterson Estates, which is the only medical center within about a 25-mile radius, just to mention a few of the things that that go on in Westbrook. So with that, I'm going to turn you over to the Westbrook Public Utilities Superintendent, Dan Joel, and Jeff Ledeen is the engineer with SEH. Dan, are you there?
Mr. Joel, please identify yourself and proceed.
This is Jim Schmidt. I am the board chair of the Westbrook Light and Power, the Westbrook Light and Power Commission. Dan is certainly also, but I will be speaking to you folks about our need for this building. And the building that we're talking about, the plant, was built 34 years ago, and we handle about 40,000 gallons of water a day. We're looking at $500,000 just to fix our tank. One of the big issues that we're looking at down the line also is, along with there's going to be a nitrate issue. We've been told by the state, little rumblings up there about the nitrates that are coming into our plant, into our water, due to the farming community. The problems that we're having is that the nitrates that are coming are going to be from 1960, and now we get to 70, 80, and 90. And we have a tremendous issue with iron and manganese. Well, it's done a devastating work to our treatment plant. And we are a community of 34% of our community is over 65, and they're living on, you know, fixed incomes, just like every other issue that we have out here in rural Minnesota. It's a major corrosion issue with our tank. We're actually looking at $500,000. We'd like to extend it out if possible. And I have not talked to Rod Hamilton about this, but we would like to look at maybe $1.4 million and do a total reconstruction of a new building and this facility, because we have to totally dismantle the building that it's in, because it's just not efficient for us to work around it. So we'll be sending that information on. We also have Jeff Lundeen. He's our engineer. And Jeff, are you available for any comment?
Mr. Ledeen, please identify yourself.
Jeff Ledeen, senior water engineer at SEH. Yes, I'm online and available for comments or questions.
Thank you, Jeff. We in Westbrook have had, like the previous people with their water tower, we just alone ourselves fiscally took care of our own water tower. With the way interest rates are going in our world today, where we're at 0.1%, has really put a big damper on our funding as far as going down the line. So we are in dire need of having this being a grant. We, as far as coming from the state of Minnesota, with the help that we need out here in rural Minnesota. Jeff, we kind of got shortchanged, or not shortchanged, but timing on this, with the construction of an entire new building. Do you have any kind of idea on what it would be?
Mr. Ledeen.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. At the core of this project is, repair, replacement of the gravity filter. The bottom corners are severely corroded, and that repair replacement was estimated at $700,000, of which the utility is asking for $500,000 in grant to help at least keep that basic filter functioning and treating the water at the current standard that they're at. Expansion or additional treatment would be added on top of that, and we haven't prepared designs or cost estimates for that enhanced treatment at this time. But just to keep the existing infrastructure, the core of the filter functioning, that filter replacement is imminent. It needs to be done relatively soon due to the corrosion.
Thank you. Jim Schmidt here again. My question would be to Representative Hamilton. Would there be an issue with us getting into right now if we got together and with Mr. Lundeen and put in an addendum to what we're asking for? Would that be feasible for us to do, Representative Hamilton?
Mr. Smith and Representative Hamilton, I think you two should connect offline on this and then let Ms. Nash and myself know as we proceed forward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Clearly, there's some more work that needs to be done on this. I understand that time is of the essence. We're up against committee deadlines, and I wish that we had known this sooner. But yes, we'll take this offline and get back to you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Hamilton. Members, any questions for Representative Hamilton and his testifiers? Seeing none, thank you, Representative Hamilton, for coming by today to present on House File 2989. Next on the agenda is House File 3171. For Chair Murphy, you have the last 10 minutes. Chair Murphy, you're muted right now.
Okay, thank you very much. Western Lake Superior Sanitary District covers many communities along Lake Superior and north, southern St. Louis County and Carlton County. House File 3171 asks for an appropriation of $6,950,000 for the Western Lake Superior Sanitary District to design, construct, and rehabilitate two secondary clarifiers in the district wastewater treatment system. Marianne Boren is the executive director of Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, and she knows everything about the district and about the clarifying improvement program, and will tell you about it so that you know what clarifying improvement means.
Thanks. Ms. Boren, please identify yourself and proceed.
Marianne Boren, Executive Director, WLSSD.
Please proceed.
Yes, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, here, let's pull up slides. I know your time is of an essence, so we'll go quickly. There. All right, so Western Lake Superior Sanitary District, for those of you who may not be familiar with us, we are located right by Lake Superior in Duluth, Minnesota. We cover a 530 square mile area, treat about 14 billion gallons of wastewater each year. And if you can see the slide, the visual shows our covered clarifiers. So if you're driving into Duluth and you look towards WLSSD, the big covered domes, those are the parts of the process that we are discussing today. The one thing I would like to make note before I go on to the next slides is if you could notice particularly the two clarifiers that you would see in that slide on your right-hand side, the proximity of those clarifiers to the water themselves. So the clarifiers were built in the early to mid 1970s, and the purpose behind that, they are a fundamental part of wastewater treatment. And as the wastewater comes to us, we provide oxygen, time, and settling, and our process mirrors what a river would do given enough time. As far as treating wastewater. So after oxygen is added and gravel is removed, the wastewater itself goes into these large covered clarifiers. They are 160 feet across. There are four of them. They each hold 2.1 million gallons of effluent. And one of the key hard workers here at the district in treating wastewater are a good bacteria. And as the bacteria eat the waste, they get heavy and they sink to the bottom. That's what these clarifiers do. They are a fundamental part of the treatment process itself. We've got internal launders. So the effluent comes into the middle of the clarifier, makes its way to the outside, and the clarified effluent goes over those launders further on into the process. We've got two clarifiers that need to be renovated. A couple years back, our clarifier number three, which is the one that is right at the corner next to the water, we did have a failure of the base of that clarifier. We spent many millions of dollars getting that back online, and then did some pretty significant studies on remaining clarifiers. So the issues, and just to give you some of the ideas of what needs to be done, There's exterior renovation of the concrete. I know you've seen many concrete pictures, so I won't spend a whole lot of time on that. But that itself, it needs to be repaired in a more significant manner than it has been up to this point. Interior renovation, because the effluent itself that we get has such a high industrial component and we add pure oxygen to it, the pH of the effluent when it's in these clarifiers are about 5.9, is about 5.9, and that's quite hard on the concrete. And so we did do core sampling a couple years back on all of these clarifiers to determine what renovation needs to be done. And we've got a fair amount of concrete erosion, particularly in clarifier number 4, which is the next one that we're going to do. So there needs to be some pretty significant concrete renovation, both outside and inside. Also, we have other protective measures that we have to put in place. So we do have, because those clarifiers were built so close to the lake itself, it does look like there was a fair amount of fill put in when they were constructed in the mid-1970s. And the pressure, the high water mark, provides pressure on the bottom of those clarifiers. And so when we renovated number 3, we put 42 pressure relief valves in the bottom to make sure that the water itself doesn't push up on the clarifiers. And that needs to happen in the rest of those as well. So our overall ask is $13.9 million, which is half the cost of doing the next two clarifiers, so clarifier 4 and clarifier 2. And we are asking for half of that, so $6.95 million. To already answer some of the questions that I know that you have, yes, we have applied for loan funding through PFA. Yes, it is on the IUP. It's called under WLSSD. It's Clarifier Rehabilitation Phase 2. It has 100. It's ranked 100.6 on PFA's list and has 56 points. We right now do not qualify for WIF grant funding based on cost and median household income. But part of the reason that we're coming for to you to ask for this is a couple fold. One, the need to do this is somewhat escalated compared to where it was before. So we've upped when these projects need to be done in our capital budget. And the other fundamental thing that occurred is when in the fall we finished our capital budget, one of the things that we learned, as most facilities, is the cost of capital, resources, and contractors is much higher than it's been in the past. And so our need for capital went way up at the same time that, yes, we're very happy that the Duluth paper mill sold, but the customer who purchased it will not be operating for a significant portion of time and will be a smaller customer. So we have less people, residents and businesses distribute these costs amongst. Hence our request to the committee to consider this for bonding assistance. With that, I guess I will ask if anyone's got any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Bourne. Members, do we have any questions? Seeing no question, Chair Murphy, any quick closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Chair Murphy.
It's a very needed project, and Director Boren explained it very well. We don't have time for the river, to wait for the rivers. We have to be our own river. And that because of the escalated need.
Thank you, Chair Murphy, for presenting House File 3171. And thank you to all presenters for joining us today. Members, our next meeting is Thursday, February 24th. We will receive an update from the Minnesota Port Association and hear several bills on an informational only basis. This meeting is adjourned.